Hello out there, and welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast. September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. And today we're kicking off a series of episodes bringing attention to the national tragedy in our veteran community. The uncertainty of transitioning from military can be challenging at best. And those difficulties are among the leading causes for someone taking their own life. Our guest today will share how he overcame the challenges he faced with his transition after 11 combat tours in Afghanistan and Iraq. Today, he's a successful businessman, a nonprofit executive, helping veterans and their families face these uncertain times. So please stay tuned for this impactful conversation. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all of our veterans and service members and families for your service to our great country. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USAA, whose mission is taking care of the military community and their families always. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. Together, they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. I don't care what you say, I say it every week. We love them too. Throughout September, we're going to talk about how we can help stop the number of suicides in our veteran community and reduce the stigma associated with this national tragedy. Today, we're talking about the challenge of transition from military to civilian life and how we applying a few principles can lead to finding identity, purpose, and a community as a civilian citizen. And I'm excited to welcome Lieutenant Colonel retired J.C. Glick Arthur, Speaker, retired Army Ranger, and a Chief Executive Officer of the Commit Foundation. Sir, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here, and it's truly an honor to get to talk to you. I think when we first talked, they told you it's kind of cool actually meeting somebody who I grew up seeing your picture on walls. I mean, that's kind of cool. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That's pretty neat.
Well, I often wonder what they did with all those pictures when I retired. I keep looking for something laying on the ground or something like that. I've never been on the fire. Hey, look, before we get started, how about telling the audience just a little bit about you, because we're going to dig into this. Just a little bit about yourself.
So, did 20 years, mostly in the Ranger Regiment and the Asymmetric Warfare Group, with, as you mentioned, 11 combat tours. Retired in 2015. Did some leadership and culture consulting with the NBA, NFL, some other large corporations. In the last year and a half have been lucky enough to lead the Commit Foundation, which really kind of takes everything that I've experienced and gone through and puts it all together. And it's really, it's a great team. It's a great mission. And, it's allowed me to grow more, in that interim of the, before I got to Commit, I wrote some books and was always looking for a way to serve more. I think you can serve in your community, but this allowed me to have a little bit bigger impact. And I was very excited when the board, selected me, and other than command, this is the best job I've ever had.
Well, you must be doing something right, because if they're reaching out to you and say, hey, come join our team, that's good. Hey, look, I got to say, you talked NFL, all that other stuff. I'm going to be honest with you now. You don't look like a basketball player, but you do look like a football player.
I think that when you work with athletes and you've come from, the military, I think there's There's an understanding of work ethic. There's an understanding of training. I think, you know, I've always been a proponent that we were tactical athletes. That's how we should train, you know, warriors. Yeah. And so it does help that, you know, being 6'3 and 230 pounds kind of helps you when you are talking to, though I will tell you, like you talk to a guy like Julius Peppers. Yeah, that dude makes me look small, and every NBA player makes me look small.
Hey, look here. I'm 5'9". I'm not going to tell you much away because I gained a little weight when I got out of the service. Hey, sir, your transition, we got to get it. They'll start running us off the show if we don't start talking about something. Hey, sir, your transition wasn't very easy. Would you tell us, you know, tell the audience really what experience prior to and during your transition? You know, tell us about your experiences.
Yeah, you know, I often talk about three transitions that I went through. And the first one was when I left kind of a deploying unit and went to the Training and Doctrine Command. And, you know, and you mentioned it, right? Identity, purpose, community. Overnight, they moved me from the Asymmetric Warfare Group to Training and Doctrine Command. And I lost, you know, I was a Ranger. I was an operator. I was a combat soldier. Okay, now I'm not those things. And purpose, like, okay, I know that I'm supposed to prepare them for war, but I'm also got to balance that with getting enough numbers out the door. And that doesn't always work. And then all my people, you know, most of TRADOC, like I looked at where I was at Fort Jackson, it was a lot of civilians who were running Fort Jackson. They were doing good work, but they weren't necessarily people that I had just spent a decade, you know, overseas, you know, working with. And 18 months after they moved me to TRADOC was my first of four suicide attempts. And I, you know, I had two while I was in uniform because I, you know, and once that happened, I know at that point I was a battalion commander and I said, they're never going to let me go back to the Army that I want to be a part of, that I identify with. So I'm going to get out. And then I had two after I got out. And what's interesting about my transition is if you look on paper, it looks amazing, right? I was a partner in a consulting firm. I was working with, you know, professional sports teams. I was writing books. I was making a very good living. It looked like I was successful. And I had two more suicide attempts because who am I now that I'm out? Right. And it wasn't like, well, I'm a lieutenant colonel. I didn't feel like that. I always felt like I was a ranger. I was a warrior. Well, you're not a warrior, right? And they say soldier for life, and God bless them. I understand the idea of that, but you're not doing soldier stuff. You're doing other stuff. And you know, what's my purpose had to be more than to make money. Like, and you know, you might make a team better, but then you leave, you're on a contract. Like you're not, you know, you're a consultant. And then I really, you know, one of the mistakes I made is I ran so far away and fast away from the gun club, right? Like my people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look around and all of a sudden you're really lonely and you're like, wait, like, who do I talk to? Like nobody has these similar experiences than I do. And so I really, really struggled. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I was here for. And I didn't have people, and I'll tell you that showed itself in some really negative ways. I was a really bad husband. I don't think I was the best father. I was angry all the time. I now understand where that anger came from, but I was making everybody around me miserable. And I saw that I wasn't feeling sorry for myself. I saw myself as the problem. I was the problem and I could eliminate the problem. And that's why I attempted suicide is because, well, no, the problem is me. I'm obviously jacked up. I am making these beautiful children like afraid of me. You know, my wife at the time, who is now my ex-wife, like there was no way she was happy. We were completely ignoring her transition, right? She had spent 20 years as a Ranger wife, you know, taking care of the kids during all those deployments. She lost her identity, purpose, and community. I completely ignored that. And I was the issue. And I think, you know, you get a lot of stigma around suicide that really frustrates me, right? One is, well, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Okay, that's very logical talking, and you're not logical when you're in that state of mind. ask for help. Okay, well, stop. You've told me my entire career, rightly so, I can do stuff on my own. I don't need anybody. Be self-sufficient.
Well, yeah, but the fact of the matter is, most of us are taught in the military not to talk about those things.
Right.
You're not going to tell somebody I got a chink in my armor. You're not going to tell somebody I can't do anything. I'm not going to tell you how I feel because I don't want to go to war with somebody like that. And you're afraid. You're afraid because if you say that, then people will think, they'll think less of you.
Absolutely.
You know, they'll think less of you and they don't want to go to combat, or they don't have the trust and confidence in you, especially as a commander.
And you know, and the units that you represent, you know, by that time you're wearing a unit on your sleeve forever, right? And so you represent that unit. And then this idea that, like, well, it's selfish. Are you kidding me? It was the least selfish thing I could do was I am the problem. I am screwing up my children, my ex-wife. Like, this is on me. And you know, it took me a long time to figure it out. And I'm really lucky. I credit it to three things. You know, I think I got a really good psych finally, who was able to help me get off a bunch of medicines that we just put people on when they're in that place.
That's certainly a downfall in the military too. We have a tendency to do that all the time. Here, take this. This will help you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. It was lots of pills. And so she helped me get off of that. I had a service dog for 5 years that was absolutely essential, and the support of my wife. You know, I got remarried, and what I realized was support doesn't always look like agreement. Sometimes it looks like calling you out on your stuff, like, hey, you're thinking wrong.
Yeah.
I didn't want anybody to feel sorry for me. I wanted somebody to help me figure this thing out. And I was really fortunate to have those things in my life and get to a place where, you know, I can separate who I am from what I do, and I can build a community of choice, and I can find purpose, not in some grandiose, you know, support and defend the Constitution of the United States, but like in every moment, like right now, my purpose is getting to talk to you. You know, and tonight it'll be, you know, date night with my wife. And like, my purpose can be in moments as opposed to
date night's a lot better than talking to me. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay. As much as I like talking to you, I'm going to agree with you on that one. Date night is
better. Yeah. You know, but a lot of things that you said, I would say that, geez, the majority of people say the same thing. And I go back, I wasn't a good father. I don't know why my wife ever stayed with me. You know, I've been married over 50 years, and she, oh, Lord, I put her through hell. And I wasn't a good father. I mean, I was more focused on the military than anything else. When I jumped out of the military, I started to do the same thing. Then I realized that I needed that that structure, those military guys and gals around me. So I had something in common with somebody. So I formed a company, and all the people I hired was ex-military. You know, so at least I talked to somebody that would at least agree with me every once in a while. But for me, the question is, I had a turning point, and I'm sure you, what was your turning point? Was there a turning point?
I think it was a gradual, you know, my wife tells me that, you know, I just say what we do at Commit is about transformation, not transition. Transition is a state, and transformation is a way of being. And I think my wife says you have to have a couple of transitions to have a transformation, because you got to learn from those things. So I would say that over I can think of some key points, some of which were even just a couple of years ago when I said, oh, well, my identity, I'm Jen's husband, and I'm Casey Corbett and Steve's father, and I'm Grace and Brennan and Isabel's stepfather. And they said, no, that's still a role. Who are you? And all of a sudden I went, oh, I was doing the same thing. Okay, well, hold on. Yeah, I aspire to be kind. I aspire to be innovative. I aspire to be driven. Who I aspire to be is who I am as a person. And that makes me good at the roles. But yeah. I'd say that those moments, right, of time, you know, the last, you know, my last attempt when my wife caught me with a gun in my mouth and talked me down and said, hey, okay, this is not you. This is what happened to you, and you are not what happened to you. And you know, those moments and the moments where all of a sudden I had these realizations of, wait, okay, look, my purpose, like I kept looking like, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? One of the things in the military, and it's kind of funny, and I know why we do it, right? Hey, so your purpose is to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Yeah, sometimes I cleaned toilets. Sometimes I painted rocks. Sometimes I went through the mud pit, right? My purpose was in every single moment. It wasn't this grandiose thing, right? Sometimes it was just sitting, waiting a QRF on a fob. And we make it, we want to be stars in our movie of life. And the truth is, look, my purpose, I did a bunch of different stuff. And so I stopped looking for that big purpose, right? I'd say that was probably about 6 years ago, where I just went, you know what? How about I make the most of every moment I'm in? And I'm going to be honest, right? I have, I still have times, you know, my daughter's, she got married in April, but she had a reception just a couple weeks ago. And I forgot my medicine, right? I'm only on one medicine. I take one very small dose of medicine a day, and I forgot it. And 3 days in, I didn't like who I was. I was snippy. I could feel myself. And so this, I don't know that there's like all of a sudden this 90 degree right turn that all of a sudden you like, okay, now it's better. I think that it's just this constant, how do I grow so I can progress, right? Growth is a kind of multi-directional, progress is forward. So how do I grow so that I can continue to progress? And that's kind of what I focus on.
You know, but you know your turning point, the gun in the mouth, no medication. And for me, I'm going to talk about myself just a little bit.
Yeah.
My problem, and I realized I had a problem when I was stomping the crap out of my son's motorcycle. And I'm saying, why am I do that? And then I wrote it down here. And then I got pissed at an E7 and I was in a room and he got that far from my face. I hit him, knocked him over a desk. And that's, you know, you can lose control, not even know that you're losing control. But it's not just me and you. There's a bunch of people out there that go through the same kind of things. And so guys like me and you're doing a very good job, and I'm trying to do my part, need to talk to as many people as you can. Say, hey, you're not alone. You're not by yourself. Everybody has problems. Doesn't matter what rank you are. We're going to help you out. Call me, talk to me, yell at me. I'll come. I'll do whatever I got to do to help you out. And I think that's what we need to do more of. And I think a lot of guys and gals are out there doing it just like yourself and trying to help as many people as you can. Go ahead, sir.
No, I think everything you said is right. I mean, I remember, you know, I was such a laid back guy, and I remember two incidences, one with my daughter and one with my oldest son, where I was screaming at them.
Yeah.
Screaming at them for like the dumb, like one time my daughter like interrupted a conversation, like nothing. Like she's a teenage girl. She was talking.
They always interrupt.
Yeah. And then my son who couldn't swallow a pill. And for whatever reason that upset me.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I am a problem. And I think that one of the things that we don't do well is, you know, and I really appreciate because you're coming from a different generation that doesn't talk about it. I think that the Vietnam War versus the 20-year war, I think we're starting to figure out we need to be more open, because guys like you who I remember seeing when I was a cadet, you know, your picture, like saying like, I want to be like that guy. People need to know that, like, no, I'm a human, right? People need to look at the guy who looks like an Army Ranger, you know, and go, no, he's just a human. Like he's failed a whole bunch more times than he succeeded. He does a whole bunch of jacked up stuff. And I think we put on these personas because we think that as leaders, that's people can't see weakness, right? And I think that I have gone out of my way to say, look, what you see is what you see, but let's talk about all the things that are inside that made this. And look, the, you know, what you see is it's such a small part of who the person is and the fight that they're going through, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Well, I think the other thing is being very open. I don't know how it happened to me. I don't know why I did it, but for my entire life, probably probably my entire life. I've been very open about war, about how I felt about war, about how it affected me in war, and the struggles I went through. And the other thing I tell people, I used to give up, and I don't do it as much as I used to, but you give speeches, and at the end of the speech, I'd play this record, A Message from Home from Lone Star, and everybody would cry, and I'd cry too. And I said, sometimes you got to let that guard down. You got to let people, just what you just said, let them know who you are. I'm just like you. I'm no different than you. I just have a different job and a different responsibility. Hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about, of course, something near and dear to your heart, the books you wrote, and I'm guessing played a large part now in your eventually successful transition. So please, sir, stay right. I know you're not going to go. You're a good rage. You'll stay right there. Don't move. Hey, this is your Next Mission Video Podcast. Me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And if you're enjoying discussion, if you're not enjoying discussion, something's wrong, because we're talking about ways to make you and me and all of us better. Ways for us to understand exactly what those issues are, talking about them, telling people how you feel, and telling people what changes you inside, no matter what rank you are, either at the top or at the bottom, it didn't matter. We all struggle. You just got to know exactly where to go and who to talk to. And you talk to anybody that's around you because they want to help you. Please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. And be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel retired J.C. Click, author, speaker, retired Army Ranger, and Chief Executive Officer of the Commit Foundation. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support the work we're doing here on behalf of our veterans and their families here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you're, you know, planning to get rid of, or some property you don't want or have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or the home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Sir, you wrote two books. Let me make sure I got this right. Light in the Darkness, Leadership Development for the Unknown, and Meditations for the Army Ranger, A Warrior's Philosophy for Everyone. And you have another one on the way called Philosophy, Listing Everything. I happen to have, let me reach down and get them now right now. I happen to have both books. What a coincidence. I'm really good at this. We're going to prop them up here. There you go. Hopefully it stays right there. I'm going to make sure it stays there. I'm going to put both of them up. Would you tell us about the books, you know, why you wrote them, and you know, what do you hope the readers would get out of it?
So the first book, it took me a long time to write the first book, and I was going in the consulting business, and I had some great mentors who said, you got to write a book if you're going to be taken seriously. So what I wanted to write is about kind of what I learned as a battalion commander in TRADOC is, hey, you have to teach people how to think, not what to think. And we have a whole system that teaches you what to think, not how to think. We don't focus on problem solving. We focus on giving you the answers to problems that have already been solved. And so I really wanted to write something that was about how do you get more out of people, right? How do you get them to think? How do you get them to solve problems when you're not around to tell them what to do? And I was lucky, right? The NFL loved it. They actually bought them for all their head coaches. Microsoft bought it for all their leaders. And they really enjoyed, and a lot of it was stuff that I learned from, you know, NCOs, quite honestly. In fact, the first book is dedicated to every NCO I've ever served with, because NCOs knew how to get the most out of everybody. And they, unlike officers, they don't just lead down, they lead up and across. And that's a very big difference that I don't know the military really acknowledges a whole lot. As an officer, I lead down. I'm not expected to lead up, and I'm not expected, in fact, I'm discouraged from leading across. But NCOs are expected to lead up, to lead across, and to lead down. And so I took those lessons and I put them in that book. The second book took me no time, because what I realized is I was telling coaches, I was telling leaders stuff that I had learned in combat. And I said, you know, when I looked at a lot of philosophy books, Marcus Aurelius, you know, Socrates, et cetera, those guys had all been warriors, and they had learned from combat some really clear ways of being. And I said, you know, we need to resurrect some of the things that we learn in combat. Like, you know, one of the things that's in the Meditations book is there's no such thing as lead by example. You set an example and then you lead, but leading requires you to provide vision, guidance, direction, right? You can't just be a good example and expect everybody to follow you. It's not leadership. It's being a good person, setting a good example, but you've got to tell them, follow me. You know, hey, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Leadership has to be done, because I watch good soldiers do good things, but nobody's following them.
Well, I gotta throw something real quick. I was just gonna say lead by example, but your analogy, that was pretty good. What I always did when I lead by example, I'd say, hey, look, this is what we gotta do, and I'd be right there doing it with them. And so you can coach and teach them as you go along. And a lot of times people will say, I want you to do this, and they'll back away. I say, I want you to do this, but I'd move right in and do it with them. The other thing is, soldiers know if they have confidence in you, have trust in you, and do you know your job? Do you have confidence in your abilities to do the job, especially when bullets start flying or something? Because they're going to look for you to be making the right decision, especially as a commander. Go ahead, sir.
No, I think I think what you did there is you led, you gave direction and guidance, and then you set an example.
Yep.
And I think that they're both important. So I was working with a player, I won't say his name, and I said, how are you making the team better today?
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm leading by example. I'm like, how does anybody know that you're running as hard as you can, or you're working as hard as, like, how does anybody know that? And he's like, I don't know. I'm like, exactly. So if you want something out of people, you got to tell them what your expectation is, and you got to tell them what you want out of them. And then, yeah, do it. But if you don't tell them and you just expect they're going to do what you do, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
You know, the best leaders I ever had was the ones that did that. They'd talk to you, but then they'd work along with you.
Yep.
And if you mess something up, they would just sort of coach you and teach you how to fix it and then keep going. They wouldn't beat you to death, you know. I always tell this funny story. When I was a division sergeant major in 1st Armored Division, we was qualifying without wearing your body armor. We was getting ready to deploy. And I said, hey, why are we doing that? I mean, you go to war, you're going to shoot with your black. I mean, they're a lot better now. And they said, if they do that, they won't shoot as well. I said, nah, bull. So I made everybody in the division, oh, I was a terrible guy, they had to fire with the body armor on. And they come back and say, oh, our scores are lower. I don't care. You better get better. Well, about 4 months later, the scores went back up. But it's train the way you're going to fight. There's a lot of it. And what we're talking about is train the way you're going to fight. Train the way you want to be. Make sure everybody's around you and they connect with you with all this stuff. So go ahead, sir. You got me so pumped up talking about this stuff.
So. So that's what I wrote about in that second book. And there's just things like, hey, you all these things that we use is what I call bumper sticker leadership. Like, you got to think about, because leadership really, you got to care about people. I always said you can't lead what you don't love, and it's a one-way street. They don't have to love you, but you got to love them. You don't have to like them, but you got to love them. And you know, we throw this term leadership around all the time. Like, oh, well, that guy's a great leader. Well, because he did the outcome or because he took care of the people?
Yeah, what makes him a good leader? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So you know, one of the things they talk about in that book are like, hey, everybody's got an opinion on what a good leader, what the characteristics and traits are. And for me, I just wanted to share like the ones that I saw that were successful across the board. They had loyalty to people. They had curiosity. They were always asking a question. They were never telling you. They were like, hey, why'd you do this? Hey, what do you think we ought to do here? They were humble, right? They never thought they were the smartest people in the room, and they had empathy. They understood what it was like to, when they told you that you were going to suck, they understood that it was going to suck. Right. Yeah, and I think that, I think those important pieces, like if you have those, you can be really, really successful. But if you don't have any of those four, like, or if you're even missing one of those four, I think you could be a good leader. I don't know that you can be a great leader.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I got 1,000 stories of old guys. Yeah. Old guys got stories all the time. So when I got to be the Sergeant Major, a friend of mine, Sergeant Major John Stevens, unfortunately he's passed away, but he called me up and he says, and he always called me Jack. He says, Jack, he said, do you mind if I give you some advice? I said, no, Sergeant Major. He said, well, first of all, when you get to be the Sergeant Major, you're going to have a lot of new friends. He said, don't forget about the ones you had before. He said, those will always be your good friends. He said, okay. He says, and the other thing is, no matter what decision you make, a lot of people are going to like you, and a lot of people are going to dislike you, no matter what you do. So when you make a decision that's good for the United States Army. Not for you personally, but what's good for the Army. And the last thing he told me, he says, don't change who you are. Every time when we move up to a different position in life, we think, you know, our head swells up a little bit and look at me, I'm better than everybody else. Well, the answer is you're no different than nobody else. You're still the same person. That's why they hired you. So don't change who you are. Stay grounded and stay focused on what you're doing. So yeah, great guy.
I think that's great advice. I think, you know, it reminds me, you know, Stan McChrystal told a group of us, it's in that second book.
Yeah.
You're not the best, you're the best available. And to remember that, right? Because it does two things. One, it does, there's a humility aspect, but more importantly, if you're not the best, that gives you the freedom to try new stuff, to experiment, to try to get better, because somebody out there is better than you. So I got to try this because maybe that'll make me better. And I think that was a game changer. That's something that I'll never forget.
Well, soldiers know if you're real. This is an old saying, probably most people listening don't know. Soldiers know if you're real or remember it, because they know if you care or you don't care, you know, by your actions. You know, I remember it used to drive me crazy. I'd go to somebody that was a senior to me and I'd be shaking their hand, saying hi, and somebody senior to them would come by and they'd turn and walk over and talk to them and just sort of ignore me. And I thought, I would never do that. You know, I'm going to stay focused on what I'm doing. Hey, you mentioned two concepts during our prep call. Don't be a civilian, be a citizen, and a quiet epidemic exile. Would you talk about that?
I'd love to. So when we help our service members and spouses, you know, leave service, we tell them, we don't want you to be a civilian. We want you to be a citizen. And we see the difference as civilians consume, citizens contribute. Right. And so you were a civilian when you came into the military and we transformed you into a warrior. Now you need to transform into a citizen, because service cannot stop just because your uniform comes off. Our veterans have so much to bring to this nation. And one of the things that frustrates me is when they become part of the divisiveness. I think that veterans are the key to unity in this nation. We don't have to agree, but we know how to not agree and still get things done. We know how to, you know, acquiesce where appropriate. We know how to keep something that's more important than just us in mind. And I'd really like, you know, I think our population, I'm very proud, you know, we have a 22% of the American population volunteers, 78% of the commit population volunteers. They're giving, and I tell them, like, I need you to have impact. We're going to invest. We invest almost $25,000 into every single veteran or spouse that goes through our program. And they pay for nothing. It's all on us. And in return, we just want them to make an impact on the country, on their community, on the world, and be citizens, be people that make the world better. So that's really important to commit.
Go ahead, sir.
No, please go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is I had this crazy idea years ago. I says, why don't we take 2 years out when somebody's going to get out of the military? Why don't we start putting more jobs that are available? So say, for example, there's a job in, you know, Michigan or Florida, whatever, put it in some kind of board in the Army and say, hey, here's a qualification. If you're interested as a service member, start getting ready to qualify for that particular job that's in Florida. Because just based on what you just said, there's a lot that they bring to the table, and start reaching into that formation of not just Army, but all services, and pull them into your organization. Because it just makes it a stronger organization, I think.
Well, I think you're spot on, and unfortunately, and I understand why, right? And everybody wants to badmouth TAPS. I think TAPS does exactly what they're designed to do, and I think they do it really well, right? Yeah. People want to badmouth it because it doesn't do X, Y, and Z. Well, it wasn't designed to do that.
Just help you get out.
and the DOD, like, as a commander, it's hard to let a guy go a year out because he's still on your books. You're not getting right. I mean, I get it. I understand. Nobody's at fault here. This is just a system that's really hard. However, if we can just spend a little bit of time, right, I really think it will pay off in reenlistment rates. I think it'll pay off on and enlistment rates, because if I take care of you getting out, you're going to say all sorts of good stuff.
That's right.
When you get out. Yeah. And I just think if we look at it, I saw a comment. I have a good friend who's in the personnel section. She's still active. And she posted something about they're shortening the window for like skill bridge, and they're shortening the window for clearing and stuff. And she said, I think this is a mistake. I think she's right. And some guy who got out as an 06 said, no, you don't need that much time to clear. So, you know, I'm a nosy dude. I went in and I looked up this guy, and he retired from the military academy. And I guarantee you, he had more than enough time to do all the things he had to do and leave.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest with you. Like, I think of that E4. I think of that E6. I think of that O5 who's, you know, getting out of command. Like, they don't have time to do all the stuff when you give them, oh, well, you got 2 months, you got 3 months. And again, it's a tough problem. Nobody's at fault here. It's just, I think we can't, it's not simply answered like, it's too much time. Hold on. Let's be thoughtful about this.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, because I used to say a couple of things. One is, I remember I was sitting on a board one time in CENTCOM, and they said, well, this guy's retired. We downgrade his award. I said, why downgrade it? If anything, upgrade is a word, because you want him to leave the military with a good feeling in himself. So don't be, you know, he did a great job. Give him an appropriate award when he gets out of the service. The other thing is, I've always thought they should put a financial education and retirement benefits into our educational system within the military, and start talking about a lot of it. Because you can't tell me, whether or not it's a year or 2 years, that I talk to you about TAPS, that you're going to pick up all that information. It's too much information. Nope. Because you're not focused on that. You're focused on your job and responsibility. So, hey, sir, this is a great discussion. We need to take another quick break. We'll come back. I want to learn more about the Commit Foundation. We'll be right back. I love this. I probably could stay here for 4 or 5 hours to talk about this.
You probably say that to everybody.
Well, I do. How do you know that? Now, here's a word from one more of the organization that helped make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Lieutenant Colonel retired J.C. Glick, author, speaker, retired Army Ranger, and Chief Executive Officer of the Commit Foundation. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please, as I said many times, reach out to me. Tell me what topics you'd like us to cover. You can call at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at SMATilley@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Sir, I got a couple questions for you before we even get started. Is I talked to a lot of people about the fact that I wish we'd do more about educating people about what it's like in combat, you know, maybe in basic training or AIT or something like that, before you ever go to war. Because I've told you before, I would really screw up when I come out of war, but and I didn't really know what I was looking for, what I should have been looking for. What do you think about that? Do you think we ought to be talking about those kind of things? Maybe in basic, I don't know where, but.
I think we ought to be talking about it in basic training. Yeah. And we did add that when I was commanded 2nd Battalion in the 39th Infantry. We added that where, you know, I wanted drill sergeants to talk to their, trainees about their experiences in combat and some of the things that they saw and some of the things that they did. And then we would go around and they would go look at these Medal of Honor, you know, write-ups. And then they talk about, hey, I want you to think about this, because these young men and women, they're not like signing up at Verizon. They're not going to JP Morgan. This is more than a job. This is more than a career. This is more than a lifestyle. This is a way of being. And it comes with some really, really harsh realities that again, you know, you should know going in. And I think that if we could start preparing people, I don't think you'll ever completely prepare somebody for what they're going to do in combat. But I think you have to have that conversation. I remember, I'll tell you this story. This is kind of funny. When I took command, you know, all we ever did was shoot at, you know, the paper targets. And I said, okay, the first thing we do on the range is I want you to get some, you know, some dead chickens and some sides of beef and some sides of pigs.
Yeah.
And I want you to shoot at them. Uh-huh. And I want them to see what our munitions do to flesh, due to these things, because they have to understand this isn't this little tiny hole that you're making. This is a lot of destruction. And I remember, like, the range control guys lost their mind. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I can do anything I want on this range. Get away from me. But these young men and women need to see, because the first time you see it cannot be the first time. And most of us, it was the first time we saw what it could do was when we had to do it for real. And I don't know that you can replicate that with pigs or sides of beef or chicken, but at least it was better than that little tiny hole that you see in a zero target, which they can't comprehend the power that they wield as humans. And I think that we have to get them prepared. And look, 10 years ago, I can tell you the stats were, you know, hey, you lose like 13% in basic training. You lose another 10 or something percent in AIT. But then you'd lose like another 25% before their first enlistment. So 50% of those who enlisted were out before their first enlistment. And I'm like, well, yeah, but then we own them, right? After 180 days, like, we own everything that happens to them after that. So let's show them some reality up front. And like, I will tell you, I had an attrition rate of about 24%. Which my brigade commander wasn't happy with, but the CG was good. He was like, hey, they're leaving anyway.
Yeah.
And it's because I think we told them this, we are preparing you for war. That's your sole function, is to prepare you for war. not to be a clerk and not to be whatever your MOS is, it's to prepare you to go to combat.
Yeah.
I think we have to do that.
There's no second best in our profession. And anything you can do to move them closer to what things actually look like. I was sitting there thinking as you're shooting at these chickens, and I see blood coming out and things like that. You know, it's sort of, you know, people probably say, but that's reality. You know, I've seen some terrible things that I certainly want to block out of my brain. But the closer you can get to reality, the better you are in a fight, the better you deal with those issues. And you don't have time to think about anything. You're reacting and doing your job. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think we ought to do something. I don't know what. Maybe shooting at chickens or pigs or whatever. Maybe that's not a bad idea. But something that gets you a little bit closer. But I think the other thing is talking about it. Talking about it with guys like maybe you and me that say, look, you know, in my time, and it's been a long time ago now, these are the things that I went through and these are the things I struggled with. And I think it's so important for people to hear those kind of things from everybody. And I'm sure that every four-star general and every private, every sergeant first class, or sergeant major, lieutenant colonel, all of them have stories that we ought to tell. So all of us at one point ought to be telling our stories to as many people as we can. That's for doggone sure. Hey, sir, the Commit Foundation, I got to get into this now. Commit Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to helping individuals figure out, you know, which I'm talking about right now, who they are and what they want to be. Would you tell us about that, talk about that with us?
Yeah, you know, I think what I love about the Commit Foundation is, again, and the military is really clear about this, is, and they use the word, we transform you into a soldier, we transform you into a sailor. They use that word transformation. And yet we continue to use the word transition when you get out, whether you've been in, you know, 6 years or you've been in 26 years. And again, you know, this is the example I give. So this can was full and it went through a transition. Now it's empty. But if I put this can in the parking lot, people are going to say, well, that's still a can. But it's gone through a transition. It hasn't changed at all. It's a can. But if I say, I want to make this into a Tesla, it has to go through a transformation. It has to be deliberate. It has to have an outcome in mind. It has to have intent and it has to have, like, I have to have a process to turn this into something else. What we don't want is, look, you're not a soldier for life. You were a soldier. You are still part of that community, but you can't do soldier things anymore. And that's okay. You can still do great things, but you need to transform into this citizen. And that's, you know, sticking with your values that aren't just Army values or Navy values or Air Force values. They're your values and they're good. And you probably had good ones coming in and now maybe you've refined them, but that's who you are, is your values. And you've got to figure out, like, what do you like to do? How do you bring impact to the world? How do you make the world better? You know, what's your role in the ecosystem? Right. And then, you know, you're so lucky as a young person, right? You come into the military and you're given your identity, your purpose, and your community from day one, and it never stops. You don't have to think about that for as long as you're in. But when you get out, like, you got to think about all those things, and community may be one of the tougher ones because you get to pick your people now. And you never had to pick your people before. You never got to pick your people. And luckily, the military's got, like, I can think of like one person I didn't like that I served with. Yeah. Everybody else, even if they weren't my kind of people, I still liked them. Like, yeah, that's a good person. And even the guy I didn't like, he's still a good person. I just didn't like him.
Yeah.
And when you're out, you've got to build that. You've got to build that. And it's hard in today's society where it's so, you know, it's very individualized, right? From social media to, you know, how you do, you know, to compensation, to everything else. It's very individualized. And nobody is thinking about, people are very concerned with themselves. And we all come from a culture where you have to think about everything before yourself. Somewhere in the middle is probably good. But I think you've got to find those right people.
You know, You make me think of another. I got to tell you another story. So
So
when I got out of the Army, I'm used to being, you know, you go somewhere, shake hands, everybody, hey, how you doing? I'm Jack, you know. So when I moved in, I built a house. I started going to all the neighbors. Hey, I'm Jack Tilley. I'm your neighbor down here. And I went to about four or five houses and went in the house. And my wife looked at me and she says, they're going to think you're a nut. Don't do that anymore. Because most of them just go in their house, close their door. And I don't want no interaction with nobody. So I've been living there now 20 years, and I've got, you know, connections now. We're all friends. But a lot of them just sort of go in and get in their own little world and don't want to commit to anything. And that's sort of
okay.
Bothered me.
All right, I got to give you I'm with you. I relate because I remember when I first moved to New York, I'm on the train into the city. My wife grew up here. She grew up on Long Island. We're going to the city. There's somebody next to me, and I'm like, hey, how you doing? And she looks at me and her eyes are up. She's like, you don't talk to people you don't know on the trip. What are you doing? And I'm like, he was right here. And like, she's apologizing. She's like, he's not from here. He doesn't. So I get it. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. You don't want to do that.
Oh yeah.
You know, don't make eye contact. Just walk. But I think
it drives me crazy.
But I think, you know, again, when I look at where we're challenged today as a nation, we've got this incredible polarization where we're in our own echo chambers, as opposed to going, hey, what are you thinking about? Like you believe this, why? Can I understand? Instead of you're wrong, like help me to understand. I go to school at, you know, I'm getting my doctorate at Columbia. And I ask people that are not like me all sorts of questions. And I've learned a lot. Like, oh, we're not so different. And, oh, hey, you know, you think this person's a really good dude, but did you know they did this? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, well, you know. But what I like about commit is, you know, one of the things that I believed in the military that we did really well is we got iteratively better, right? We did AAR, so the next squad would do better and the next unit would do better. And we shared information and we got better as an organization. We should do the same thing with veteran transition, right? And everybody who comes after me should have a better transition than I did. And we should help them with the things that, again, TAPS is doing what they're supposed to do, but they can't do this. And this transformational piece, you know, you're in a disorienting dilemma. It takes reflection. It takes time. It takes commitment. It takes thought. And then it takes a group, a community that's willing to introduce you to people. And that's what we do, right? We bring these people together and then we introduce some people that have never been in the military, but they're really great people, right? I mean, you and I both know, I think we talked about it. You know, the two biggest myths that you hear in the military is you'll never do anything as cool as you do in the military. You'll never meet people as great as you did in the military. Well, it's nonsense. I meet great people every day that never even thought about putting on
Absolutely.
A uniform.
Yeah.
And I've done really cool stuff that I never would have gotten to do in the military. It's different cool stuff, but it's still cool. And I understand why we do it. I'm not saying anybody's wrong. I'm saying we just have to, two things can be good. You can be good in the military and then you can be a good citizen. It's not a false binary choice.
I'm going to go back a little bit. I agree with everything you said. Yeah. I go back a little bit to TAPS. I think one of the things is TAPS, what they ought to do is hire people that have been in the Army, have been out of the Army or military about 4 or 5 years and let them teach TAPS. Because I think sometimes we hire people directly out of the military and put them there, and they have a lesson plan and all that other stuff. But we need more of a real world kind of things, and I think we miss that sometimes in TAPS. Hey, if somebody wants to reach out to you, do you have a website or a phone number?
Yeah, absolutely. Commitfoundation.org, and you can apply there if you're a veteran, if you're the spouse of a veteran. If you were the spouse of a veteran and you're no longer with that veteran anymore, but you still need some help in this transformation journey. If you're a member of the Five Eyes, a veteran or a spouse from the Five Eyes, if you're a member of the intelligence community or a spouse, we will help all those folks. And what's really cool about our program is it's research-based, it's evidence-based. It comes from a whole line of thinkers in transformational learning. And It's a universal piece. Like, everybody goes through this. I don't care who you are. Like, if you're a stockbroker and you spend 20 years on the floor and then you leave that, you got to go through a transformation, right? You retire from your job, you got to go through a transformation. So what we're doing, we've just adapted it for military folks.
I continue to transform every day. I'm always going through a transformation. That's for darn sure. Hey, sir, this has been a great discussion. Any final thoughts, anything that maybe you want to share with the audience or maybe you missed or want to reemphasize?
You know, I think I want to add to the suicide piece is as important it is to talk to others. I think it's really important that you go and ask people how they're doing, right? You don't expect them to come and just confide when they're in a bad space. I don't know what I would have said if somebody said, hey, are you thinking about hurting yourself? That might have been enough to turn the tide for me.
Well, they're afraid to ask that question. And that's a question they ought to ask. They ought to ask. They're a question about it.
You know, we say that it's interesting. I've used this example. You know, we say that it's a hard conversation to have. Well, if I just give you an M4 and tell you to go to the range and qualify, and I don't give you any training on it, yeah, it's going to be hard to qualify. But once you've learned how to shoot the weapon, it's easy to qualify. And I think that if we practice having those conversations and asking that, so it's just normal. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, I must hear thank you for your service 100 times a day. Why are we not asking people, hey, are you okay? Are you doing okay? What can I do for you? And I think that last piece, how can I do something for you? How can I help you? If just as a society, we started asking that question with real curiosity and real intention of, they may ask for something and let me see if I can do it. With every intention of, yeah, if they ask me something that's within my capacity, I'm going to help that person. I think maybe we get out of where we are with some of the divisiveness in our nation right now.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I love helping people.
Yeah.
I love doing anything I can to make somebody's life better. I mean, it just, you know, as you get older, you say, geez, let me give something back. Let me give as much back. In fact, I call my granddaughter every once in a while and say, hey, look, are you taking the grandkids anywhere? No. Well, if you do, I'll pay for wherever you want to go. I mean, I want to give back as much as I can. Hey, the other thing you said, when people say, I picked this up from Sergeant Major Henry Grinston. Every time somebody says, thank you for your service, you know what he says? He said, you're worth it. And what a great comeback. Nice. Oh, I love it. I love it. He says, you're worth it. I say it all the time. People say, hey, thank you for your service. You're worth it. And they look at me and say, oh, that's pretty nice. Well, I mean it because I'm willing to die for your freedoms. You're worth it for me. I'm ready to die for you. Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, the other thing I want to tell you is, I don't know, if you ever need some help, I'm an easy guy to get at home. Reach out to me. I'll give you my phone number, not on the show right now, but email, LinkedIn. Want to talk to somebody if you're in a bad spot? I'm here for you. I'll do whatever.
Oh, you're in trouble now because I've already got three or four places I want you and Ted to be. So you're in trouble.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, Ted's the big guy. You don't know that, but he's got these ropes and stuff. He's just making my hands move and stuff. Hey, sir, thanks again for being on the show. Really appreciate it. Hope you had a great time. And thank you so much for the great information. Great insight. And thanks for being honest and straightforward. And I think that's certainly what we need. That's for sure.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. It was an absolute privilege. It really was. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
Oh, God bless you. Thanks again, Lieutenant Colonel retired J.C. Glick of Commit Foundation for being with us. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And you've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for joining us. Log on to our website at yournextmission.org. And while you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition from the military. And check out our job board in partnership with Recruit Military, an offline where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can follow me on our social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, of course, Rumble. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast releases. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message at 844 424-1134, or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Lieutenant Colonel Glick for joining us today. It was, just wonderful. It's good to have somebody on the show. I mean, a lot of people are on the show and talk. A lot of people talk about a lot of things, but when you get to somebody that just opens up to you, talks about the fact that he was going to take his life, and says, you know, talks about the things he should have did. He opened up and said, "Hey, here I am. Look at me. I've got problems. I've got issues. And reach out to me. Talk about how you feel. Tell people how you feel. Don't be afraid to talk about those kind of things." I even talked about the things that bothered me. And you know, it's a form of therapy for you to tell people how you feel. I just want you to know you're not alone. None of us are alone. We all are bonded by that, that warrior creed. And we all want to stay together and help each other. You know, if you need help or have some difficulties coping with your transition or any other mental health challenges, please reach out to Suicide Crisis Lifeline by dialing 988, and someone will be there to talk to you. Thanks for watching, and thanks to New Mind Studios, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.